Lou Moon on. This is awesome because I had Patrick Bean on and I just saw his post on Facebook about his special, and then I watched it and you were on it, and I was just like, this guy is fantastic. And I'm always very excited when I see another fellow autistic like comedian, because there's like a few of us that are popping up now, and it's just always nice to like meet someone that has deals with the same stuff that we, all deal with. And to hear that you like teach like students and special ed, like that's awesome to me. Like just everything was really cool. And then I listened to your album and it was fantastic. I'm not just saying that, it was great. I loved it.
Man, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you. I feel the same sort of charge whenever I meet someone else in comedy who's also on the spectrum, just because I find it like remarkable that there aren't more of us, I guess. Well, I mean, I guess to some people there are. can I tell you a story real
Yeah,
quick?
sure. Go ahead.
So I'm working on a bit about it right now, but after I recorded the album, I wasn't signed to a label yet, and I did it all DIY. I just sort of assumed that that's how, it was supposed to be done to begin with. That is kind of how they do it for a certain very popular record label that I will not say the name of, a comedy record label. And what's that?
I think I know what you're who you're talking about.
It's, so I sent my album into them, and I got a rejection letter from them, which is, is what it is. But they really took took care to let me know why I wasn't getting signed to them, and which is, whatever. They're like, well, we want to let you know why you're not being signed to us. That's nothing good ever follows a statement like
No,
that.
of course not.
A part of the reason why they didn't sign me is because, according to the executive at this label, they were like, and I've been working on this joke right now, so I know exactly what they said. They said, we have been seeing a deluge of, in quotation marks, Spectrum comics.
Oh. No,
And I'm like,
I can totally buy that. I can totally buy that. And it's such a hard thing because, like, I would never want to deny anyone has anything, but there is a common thing of people not really knowing, like, if they have ADD or something else, or, like, it just, and it's very hard because you don't want to, like, specifically for me, I have a joke about how, like, there's a legion of us, like, we all get along pretty well, but there's always those couple comedians that are, like, try to make themselves the autism comedian, and it's like, that's not fair. You just have better jokes than us and better at social media. That's not fair. Like, to be like, I'm the one. Like,
Exactly.
it's like,
It's sort of like, gosh, I'm trying to remember who this guy's name is, but he was around in like the 50s for like the Friars Club kind of like era of comedy, and like his whole gimmick, it's like Foster or something.
Right.
His whole gimmick was that he was drunk all the time.
Oh.
And it's sort of like, it kind of reminds me of that, where it's like, I feel like so many comedians are like, well, I'm the blank
Right,
comedian.
of
And I'm
course.
like, you don't have to do that. I feel like the best comedy is just like a person talking to other people and like them being able to get it. Just, where
Oh,
like, I feel
yeah.
like with like, and with autism, it's extra difficult to actually do that. Which is why I think like comedians like with autism actually performing and, like, getting it out there that we're not, like, you know, young Sheldon all the time.
Right.
Is good for all of us, you know what I
mean? Right.
So the idea of someone being the autistic comedian kind of sets my teeth on edge as well.
Right. Because there's so many different, like, types of, you know, like, the diagnosis and what you can be, and it's, like, it's funny, like, I'm not intellectual at all, so it's, like, funny the like, contrast of that, of, like, what people think, like, you are, and it's, like, no, this is, like, way different than what people think, which is good. It's good, like, to subvert that, and also, like, I remember, do you know who Gary Goldman is?
Like, I adore Gary Goldman.
Yeah, I met him a couple times. He was super nice to me. But anyway, when he was doing his, when he was doing his, like, tips on Twitter of, like, he said the best thing you can do in comedy is teach something, you know, make it a little bit educational to people of something that they might not know about. And, like, I've been, recently I've been delving more into talking about my autism and stuff like that just to, and it's been really helpful, like, with people understanding some stuff and understanding, like, where we're coming from with a lot of stuff. So I just think it's cool, like, that you address it and that it, like, it's just there. Like, you just make it, like, known, because that can be very hard. You know, we tie so much to our self-worth in comedy of, like, we want to address ourselves as a comedian for so many years. That, like, once you add that label on top of it, it's just hard, like, to do that.
Exactly.
Because you want to be viewed as a comedian first.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, if I can convey to, like, an audience that, like, autism isn't just one thing.
Right.
That, it's like, there are many different levels. The fact that I can get up on stage and debase myself and be a clown for you, like,
right,
doesn't denote, like, lesser or greater autism. It's still,
right,
it's all the same.
It's all the same, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, where it's like, I work with people on a daily basis who, you know, can't verbally communicate, or,
right,
know, it's like, I work today. I'm fucking exhausted from my own job. My own job is seeing different reflections of me. You know?
Right.
Like, and I'm like, Jesus fuck, I'm tired.
Right. I can imagine, because it's like, partly you're empathetic, but partly it's like, no, you have to deal with that stuff. It's like,
yeah, no, exactly. And, like, I know what they're going through, and, you know, what they're going through is sort of, you know, reflective of, like, certain stages of my own life. And
right.
I'm lucky that I get to have my own place and hold them a job and,
right,
you know, be a comic, and, you know, where it's like, they, you know, they don't necessarily get to have that.
Right.
But goddamn it, I'm tired of people screaming. I don't want people to scream at me.
Oh, yeah.
People.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I've heard positive things about this, but I've heard that they're better in schools. I don't know if you can probably tell me this, if it's true or not. Are they better at, like, separating, like, people from learning disabilities and, like, behavioral issues better?
Yeah, I definitely say so.
I heard that, and I was like, that made me feel so much better for kids, like, in the younger generation that they have that. Because to me, like, what would always happen, and this was a big, like, epidemic, they put kids that don't have behavioral issues but are just assholes, like, in the class with the kids with real behavioral issues. And that's a real, like, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that student's just an asshole. Like, you know, you can't put him in the same class as a kid that can't focus. It's like,
right,
that's not good to do. But I think, yeah.
Those kind of behavior issues from the sort of, you know, for lack of a better term, for the more sort of, like, typical, neurotypical students.
Right.
You know, like, I wouldn't say that isn't not, like, a neurodivergence. It's like, you know, attention-seeking behavior.
And, right.
You know, like, but at the same time, it's like, dude, I had this incident last year where I was, you know, I was in a sort of general education classroom.
Mm-hmm.
with one student of mine who was on the spectrum, and I love this game.
Right.
And I was really, really protective over this student, and like there were students in there, you know, like sort of, you know, indirectly, you know, making fun of peers of his, you know, by like, you know, doing like the sort of typical like dumb guy voice, and then like they use, you know, just like they use the R word, they use the word retarded, and
right.
like I use that opportunity to, you know, do my best to be like empathetic with them, and you know, I put them aside while like hey guys, like that word, it just like I'm not trying to come down on you. I'm not trying to, you know, like be the fun police, but like there are students in that classroom who are like deeply affected by that word, you know,
and right.
like it's, I would really appreciate it if you didn't use that word. I'm right. really defensive. I'm right. really just like, well, like who cares? It's just a word. I'm like, these people care. I care. You know, like we, you know, it's funny to think that, like, I think, like, a stereotype of autism is, like, a lack of empathy.
Right.
When, in reality, I mean, that's a small sort of fraction of people who are on the yeah. spectrum.
I think...
When really, like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
You know, it sounds, like, really self-deprecating to say this, but it's true. It's like... Your brain just hates you when you have autism. That's all it is your brain just hates you. It doesn't want you to be, like, coherent like everyone else's. Because it's not only, like, your brain, it's, like, mixed with emotion, too. It's like, okay, this makes me feel this way, so this has to be this way all the time or I get upset. it's like if this doesn't go in the format that my brain wants it to go, then it just has a meltdown like a baby. It's like...
Exactly. So I was at a party, I was at a New Year's Eve party not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And like this, I feel like this is like I was thinking about this, I've been like turning this into a bit about autism, where
right.
I was talking to someone, and you know how like sometimes you like joke about your own life?
Oh
and,
yeah.
And like you think it's funny, but other people are like, that's not how people are. And
right.
You're concerned,
now, you know?
You're concerned, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's the whole just like, yeah, I remember when your dad used to just beat the fuck out of you, and people are like, Jesus Christ.
Right.
But, like, I was making this joke about how, like, whenever anyone is mad at me, I just assume they're right.
Oh.
Like, every time someone's upset at me, it's just like, oh, yeah, you know, it's just like...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I thought it was this way, and, you know, yeah. And, like, this guy at this party was like, no, I have never felt that way. And, like, I sort of came away from that, like, you've never felt that way? What, do you live in a fucking castle? Like, what?
No, I think that's... that inverse sounds weird to me, but I think... That is a common thing of, like, people... That's someone that I just view as, like, a narcissist. They don't have that, like... And I think the one thing that's like our enemy is people with narcissism. Because we're so, like... Because with autism and with any type of social disorder or any disorder, you are so used to failing. And, like, failing at social interactions. Failing at, you know, just something happens. And you just... You fail at it at such a level... That when you see someone else fail and they're not like, oh, I fucked up too, you're like, no, dude, I've been there. I live there in that space of, oh, I fucked up. And when we see people who are like, oh, I didn't fuck up, it's like, no, I know this.
It's okay to fuck up, but like own it, you know?
Yeah, I think we're way better at owning it. That's just my, you know, like... What I think.
How, like, it's funny when it's like, do you know the comedian Eugene Mirman?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, he's always been one of my favorite comedians. And he has this joke about how he got out of a car on, like, a busy New York street.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he opened his car, like, too soon, and the car, like, hit... someone passing by, like, on a bicycle.
Right, yeah.
And so, like, this, you know, this cyclist, like, slams into this open car door, and it's just like, share the road, look where you're going, and, like, Eugene's like, you gotta look where you're going, and then you saw that he, like, parked in a bike lane.
Right.
And as soon as he saw that, like, he was just like, sorry, I was wrong.
Right, exactly.
Like,
no, he's
something I think about. Like that, I think about all the time because it's like the because like I feel like there's so much like to like the sort of like higher independence autistic people where like I don't know about you, I can be very argumentative.
Oh yeah, I mean to me it's like I have such a strong like resilience on, like, I like to have all the facts with me, and that can be very tough, too, because I'm, like, because
right.
I will shut down, like, if I don't want to talk, because I'm, like, I don't have an argument. I'm not going to say something emotionally, then I'm going to be wrong and lose the argument. It's, like, you know, it's,
oh,
like,
man.
It's, like, you don't do that. It's, like, to me, it's, like, some people will just talk, like, during an argument. When you could save yourself a lot of time to be like, well, I don't have all the stuff with me. It's like I have no weapons to fight back with. It's,
oh, man.
It's like, you know, I don't have a sword to, like, fight with you intellectually with this at all. If I had one, I would use it. I don't.
Dude, good for you for being that way. I don't have that in me.
I think it takes a long time, you know, and I don't have it all the time, you know. Of course you lose your temper at stuff, but it is the thing that I always am a de-escalation person too. There's so much like that too, because I don't know if this is just me, but I feel like we can sometimes view attention in a real weird way of like you can. Like, I never wanted to get in trouble as a kid. I was not a troublemaker. I was not a shy kid. I was not, like, very quiet or anything. My teachers would use – I have a very funny story. When I was in, like, second grade, and they were teaching us the word humble, my teacher, like, used me as an example. And it's like, that's a weird thing to call a 7-year-old humble. And it's like, that was in my head. I'm like, I'm fucking 8.
7-year-old who's been there before.
Right. And it's just like, yeah, but so for that, it's just, you know, being that way.
I am so the person where, like, I'm like in my heart, and this is the thing that that's the heart, you know, like in my heart. Like, I know I have all the facts, and rarely do I ever, and I just go, like, full heart, full emotion into it.
Right.
And, like, the amount of times I've had to just be like, no, you're right, I'm sorry.
Right. I mean, hindsight is a total thing, too, and especially as you get older, I think you get better at it. Just by, like, growing up, you're just like, oh, okay, this is where I went wrong.
Yeah. I set myself up for failure like that so often because I so have this, like, wound with, like, being wrong. I don't know how you were when you were a kid, but, like, I didn't talk until I was, like, 4, you know?
Oh.
So I had really delayed speech, and I was very emotional and, like, very loud, but, like, not a lot of people understood exactly what I was saying because of my delayed speech.
Mm-hmm.
And so, just a lot of people just, like, assumed that I was just kind of, like, stupid, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and, yeah, so setting myself up in that way where I still sort of come from that place of, like, emotion and, you know, that whole thing, and then get proven wrong, and I just, God,
that's a tough thing in comedy for two reasons, because
we
have to deal with failure of jokes not working, and there's that, and also there's the social interaction and being a comedian, which is so funny. Like, I always say we're like infants in suits. Like, we try to be professional and like all this shit, but we're just children, like comedians as a species of people. It's like, so, you know, and everyone has like neurodivergency and everything is like full of, you know, is huge in comedy. It's just there's people with everything. So we give people leeway, a lot of comedians, but that doesn't mean it's not like a, like, what's a word for it? That's not like a challenge, like socially.
Right.
And yeah. When you have something on top of that, it's like, you know, you can't, it can be very difficult to maneuver through the social interactions that you have to go through to do comedy.
Yeah, man.
It's like, I get on stage, it's like, if I get on stage, I said this one time and it was too sad, like, but it was like, true, it's like, when I get on stage, the worst time on stage is better than 99% of my life off stage. Like, even if I'm bombing in that moment, it's still better than anything off stage.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's the thing that I look forward to the most, like having a show and then we're like getting a mic or whatever. And then, like, it's like, for me, it's like I build it up in my head, and then, like, if it goes wrong, I'm just like, well, that sucked too, you know?
Right, exactly. And then you're like, that was not, you know, and we build it up in our head so much of like what we want to do. And on top of that, like, when I go on stage, it's always so funny, like, I'll have an idea or I'll even have stuff written down to like talk about, and like 80% of the time it just doesn't go that way. It's just like, it's not as planned out. It's totally based in emotion. Like, the one thing that I have that's, I always feel so different from a lot of people is I can't, like, compartmentalize a lot of the time. Of like, if I'm going to go on stage and, like, I have, like, a bad day, you're going to see that in my mood on stage. I don't, like, turn on, like, a performance thing of, like, oh, we'll pretend to be happy on stage. It's like, no, if I had a rough day, you're going to notice on stage.
Oh, dude, I'm the exact same way. Fuck me, dude. Like, you saw like the thing on Amazon and you listened to the album, like so much of my material is based off of like nervous energy.
Like the way I explain it, I have this joke of how my stage presence is really bad, not because I have stage fright, I just have social anxiety. So the way that I word it is, I minor in autism, I major in anxiety and depression. So, it's that way, you know. I just have that. So, it's like, then I moved on to other things. It's just like, that just opens the gate for people, because it lets them know, like, no, I've been doing this for many years, and I'm good if you give me 3 seconds to explain I'm good. Just like you did in your beginning. They're like, I know I'm funny. I'll show you this one-liner.
like when I started, like, there was this whole, like, idea of, like, well, you better crush because, like, those people are going to remember you how you were that night for the rest of your life. And, I let that get in my head so bad.
Oh, I can imagine. And it's like, whenever you have like that thing on stage, you're just like, okay, this is what I, is that usually, I guess I should get my thoughts collected on this, but like, is that like your general energy from the album that I saw? Like, you go on stage, like, kind of excited like that, or was that like kind of happening in the moment?
I would say, generally speaking, like, that's pretty constantly my energy on stage.
Oh, okay.
Lately, I've been, I recorded that, about a year ago now, and, that was the sort of culmination of, like, 7 years worth of work, and, I've always had a nervous energy because I'm always fucking nervous about going on stage. Always. And I had never done that long before either. By the end of it, like, I was, like, really, like, I felt like I they just like sang a bunch of like Rolling Stones songs or something, because like
right,
like my voice was super hoarse and
oh,
like,
I bet.
I don't think I can. Yeah,
dude. I've heard that from everyone that has like recorded an album or a special. Like I've heard that common thing. Like everyone, they're like, "Oh yeah, my voice was."
Oh, dude, it was just like shredded. Like it was bad. But lately, I would say like, it still has like my comedy now still has a lot of that like big energy, big excitement kind of feel to it.
Right.
But, like, I've been more sort of writing longer form, like, a la, like, Gary Coleman, a la Mike Birbiglia.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those are my guys, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear those names, because I love those guys. And it's just, like, to me, I always say that when I started, like, watching comedy, like, when I was a teenager and, like, a kid, like, stand-up was actually in a really weird place at the time, because on Comedy Central, they only played three people. They played Dane Cook, Jeff Dunham, and Gabriel Iglesias. And those are three distinct styles. But they didn't really play anyone else. So when I started watching like stuff on HBO and Showtime, it's like, okay, there's where I find out like Louis C.K. and Bill Burr and Greg Giraldo and all those people. And that's when I got like... And then when I got more into it in like the 2010s, it was like, okay, John Mulaney and Gary Goldman and Pete Holmes, and like it just opened up this world for me to dive into and be like, okay, this is what I want to be, what I want to do. And it's
like, do you remember who the first stand-up you ever saw was?
I think the first stand-up I ever saw on TV with my dad was Carlin, and I thought that was really funny, and he's one of my favorites actually. Like, he was very interesting to me. It was like, I wasn't really paying attention to what he was saying on stage. It was more like, oh, that's a guy that's just up there. Like, he's just, like, it was, like, kind of, like, magical to me in a way. I was like, oh, wow. There's a guy on stage. He's just talking and moving around. And he was doing this joke about, like, the loin and the groin thing. And he was just, like, it was so, like, intricate to me. I was like, that is cool. And then when I got more into stand-up as a fan, you know, he's one of my favorites. And I was so pissed off that he died that year when I started becoming a super fan of comedy. And I was just like, oh, man. And that just came. Like, that just was in me, because I didn't really grow up watching stand-up as a child, and I wish I did. But I got, like, sort of the crash course of the second generation of it happening. From, like, after the 80s boom, there was, you know, the podcasting, like, Marc Maron, and then Pete Holmes' podcast and all that. Like, I just went full into it. And I was lucky to be to start doing comedy around that time, where it had a mini boom again since the 80s. So it was like, okay, people kind of know now. And now people know even more due to Netflix. But even then, like, it still has always been a niche thing. And I think that's such a weird, like, prospect to people, because people think, like, they're so attainable to watch comedy now. But to really be into it as a fan is a whole other, like, subject.
Exactly. Like, I don't know, you know, it's like, the people who, like, are around me who, like in my area, who get really excited or, like, excited at the idea that I stand up, you know?
Right.
Are, like, the majority of the people that, you know, like, they want to talk about are the, like, Tom Segura's.
Right, those guys. And it's like, you know, it's like, I like those guys, sure. And there is that sort of, like, those are, like, the bros of comedy. And it's so weird because I grew up in such a different, like, the guys that I sort of idolized, I call them the man children of comedy, just, like, with their style of comedy. It was Mike Birbiglia, Pete Holmes, you know, Kumail, like, people like that, Eugene. It was, like, those are the guys that I sort of, I guess the alt comedy scene, I guess, was what I grew into, and, you know, always loved Patton Oswalt, and just, like, that was what I liked. And I see it all the time now on YouTube and, like, these comedy pages. It's like, oh, they just follow these bro-type guys. It's like, that's fine. Some of them are great comics. Really are.
Yeah.
But it's like, absolutely, that's just not the only thing out there. And I think it's such a, and that's the hard thing with comedy too. You know, when I started doing this podcast, it was interesting because I listened to comedy a lot on Spotify. I listen to albums. I'm the same way. I have this playlist. I have a playlist on Spotify called Cried Laughing Favorite Jokes, which is just hysterical bits that were hysterical to me. And there's like over 30 hours of just different jokes from different comedians. And I'm always listening to albums. And then what I'll do is I'll find someone who's like the best comedian in like Idaho, and they have an album. And then I go on Facebook, I see we have like 600 mutual friends. And I'm like, okay, I need to get this guy on the podcast. It's like, it's all over the world. And that can be kind of also like intimidating, and also really cool to be like, I've had quite a lot of comedians from Arizona on the podcast, and it's like, yeah, it's all over the world. This stand-up is, it's, man, everywhere.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah. So it's, and the thing that's like kind of annoying with it is there's new comedians every single day, because there's people working to be comedians. Like, there's always going to be someone new that's starting at an open mic right now tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I'm like, I let those guys like get to me so often, just by, like, man, I feel really quick to space, or I get weirdly like indignant and like upset, just like, these guys don't know, they don't got what it takes. And it's like, on one hand I'm like, all right, man, I'm gonna figure it out,
right?
Or the thing I always forget about, it's because it's like not my experience, it's the oh, man, who knows if I'm ever going to see this guy ever again, you know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
It's the sort of the Burt Kreischer's, the Tom Segura's, again, you know, like, not here to yuck anyone's yum, if that's
your... No, name. Right, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and those guys all have bits that are, like, I like.
Right, of course.
Like,
I think...
But I'm always... sort of afraid of is the like guys who like see that and they're like, oh, that's what comedy is.
Well, like, I think the hardest thing now, and I've been talking about it a lot on the podcast, and I just have this opinion, is it's very hard, the saying, like, when you're when comedians perform and they get big, there is a tendency, and you see it through those podcasts all the time, of people to sort of get this thing in their brain where they're like, oh, this person isn't just coming to see me perform. They care about my actual views and actual shit and actual things like that I want. And then they listen to these podcasts where they get to know these people. And I think it gets conflated of like, no, dude, they, not to deny that people are relating to you or anything, but they came to see you be funny. They didn't come to see you, your worldview, in a specific way like that. And I think that gets conflated a lot of like, no, like, and I think that's where it kind of gets tricky, because it's like they hear those guys talk about comedy in a certain way or talk about their lives in a certain way, and they think that's everybody. And it's like, no, it's not. And I think that's the hard thing. And I can understand, like, when you're a comedian for so many years, that must be... I can understand how it can get that way, you know, if that moment where it turns off from performing and you're not just seeing like their views as a performer, you sort of see their inside views of their life and everything. And it's like, that's different, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, what I've been really focusing on now, I think we've been doing comedy around the same time. I started doing stand up in 2015. I started doing comedy in general with improv in 2009 when I was 16. So I just turned 30. So I started in 2015 doing stand-up. When did you start doing stand-up?
I started in 2016.
Oh, okay. So, around the same time, yeah.
Yeah, like when I was 24, that's when I started. And I'm turning 32 years soon.
Yeah, I was like 22 and a half, 21 and a half, like it was 21 and a half. So yeah, it's crazy though. And that was, you'll relate to this probably, was there was a whole thing, it was kind of like probably what comedians were going through with Bush at the time. We had the same thing with Trump, where it was like, we're not going to do Trump jokes. That's hack. Like, you know, but that was like right in the middle of it. That was like right in the middle of all that stuff.
Exactly. Like, I sort of like, I don't know, like I like just as in general, like as a person, I would say I'm a very political person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so, but I also I never wanted to be the guy who only talks about like one thing.
Oh yeah, for sure. About,
like as much as I can. So you know, it's like you know, when I started, I'm like, I'm gonna write one joke about you know being physically disabled. I'm gonna have one joke about like autism. I'm gonna have one joke, and you know, it's like you know, I was you know, I'm a pretty again, a pretty political person, so like, I'm gonna have like one Trump joke, but like,
It's gonna be like, you know, I think the one thing that I love about just your everything that I saw in your set from both of those, but also mostly from your new album is you're what I aspire to be in like a jack of all trades. Like you can do one liners, you can do stories, you can do like jokes. It's like that's what I like. It's that sort of like skill set of having all that. Like,
thank you for saying so.
Yes. I think, you know, I'm very, like, I don't know, like, I can be kind of critical. Like, the one thing that I'm always, like, I'm kind of a jerk about is comedy classes. Like, I'm totally against that whole entire, like, thing of that.
Totally.
Because to me, I'm, like, I'm kind of, like, selfishly proud that I taught myself how to do stand-up.
Right.
I quit everything in life. This is one thing that I learned to do. And, like, I didn't know how to write a joke when I started, and then 2 years later, I knew how to write a joke. And then last year, I learned how to do, like, callbacks and stuff like that. And just each year, I'm just learning new stuff. And I get, like, you're just building that. Like, you're building your voice, and you're building, like, your act. And it's a really cool thing. And I think, like, the thing that I just get is, like, out the gate, I think it's bad to, like, start by imitating someone's, like, rules of comedy because it's, like, they're just going to rub off on you in that way. And it's, like, of course I have different comedians that I'm friends with that I've, you know, learned stuff from, and that's kind of similar. But you always have that base of, like, no, this is what I do.
Yeah, like, I think in an ideal sort of world, you know, it's, like, the comedians are, you know, like, and writers and musicians and every sort of art form, it's all sort of about, you know, the self and what the self is sort of.
Right.
Like, it's reflecting back to an audience, like, what, you know, the self had seen that day kind of thing. But it's also, like, I think that's a big thing I actually talk about in the comedy workshop that I run.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I do a comedy workshop at an improv theater here, and the whole idea is, like, it's not about writing technique, it's not about, like, you know, how to make money in comedy, it's all about, like, how do I put my voice into what...
Yeah, in everything. And to find that is, and it's extremely tough. Like you're like me, like when you start at a young age, that's a really like kind of drastic thing. Cause you're in a, as opposed to people who start in their 30s, like I kind of envy those people cause they have like 3 decades of shit to talk about. But when you're like growing up doing it, you're like, your views change over the years. You like, you know, it's so funny. I used to be so much more opinionated on stage and like, which is like, it's better now to be a calmer person off stage, but like still wish I had some of that energy of when I was younger on stage and you just look at things.
Sort of a,
yeah.
It's like a, cause like when you're younger, you just have all this like unearned confidence.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then when you're like, older, you have like this earnestness of like, oh yeah, no, I don't know anything.
Yeah, that's like, you know, that's your first grade teacher coming back to your show and being like, you say
uncle. Right. Right. And it's like, yeah. When you were like starting out and doing stuff, was there a lot of, are the clubs pretty much good there? Like, do they treat comics pretty well?
Oh, the comedy clubs out here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Out here in Phoenix, we have a fuck ton of clubs.
That's good.
Like a lot.
Yeah.
We got Tempe Improv, Stand Up Live, Dover Ridge Improv now. And then these, like, I would say, like, four or five, like, more sort of, like, auxiliary kind of smaller comedy clubs.
Right.
In Glendale and Chandler, and then, you know, all the improv theaters out here at Stand Up, too.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of opportunities to get up here.
I like asking people that because I'm in New Jersey, which has terrible... most of us are underground comics. Most of us are, you know, we put on our own shows. It's very punk rock. Like, the couple clubs we have are, they kind of like a specific, like, Northeast kind of style of, you know, from New Jersey to New York to Philly. They kind of like the insult comedy. They like a lot of boomer comedy. They kind of like those audiences of, like, older boomer people. And it's very tough to break into clubs. So we just have, like, these punk rock mics that turn into shows that turn into, you know, when people are able to, like, get traction and, like, things happen. But it's hard because we don't have that, like, the industry doesn't help us out at all in New Jersey. Like, that's the thing. I talk to everyone from different states on the podcast, like, man, I'm so envious. I'm like, oh, your comedy clubs actually treat you nice and welcome you and are like, like, let's have new young people instead of being like, no, you have to, like, we're not gonna let, like, people come in. It's like, okay, I can understand, like, you don't want to, like, immediately book people right away who have never done comedy. But, like, if we've been striving for, like, 70 years, like, there should be some way to get on your stage. And there should be some way to, like, have that process.
Oh, dude, well, like, I mean, I'll tell you right now, you know, like, there are a lot of clubs out here, but, like, out of, like, the, you know, 8 or so comedy clubs out here, I've been booked on weekends at one of them.
Right. Well, and it's also, like, getting past that at any club is kind of hard. I can imagine in any state, like, they just are, because the way they're run is, you know, set a specific way. But, yeah.
Yeah. Like, well, and, like, I was sort of, like, lamenting to a friend of mine about this not too long ago, and you know, it's the sort of thing of like, man, like, no one wants to, like, book me to, like, host or feature, and, you know, it's like, I don't know what these, like, comedy clubs think of me. They know who I am, they know how to reach out to me, yada yada. And then my friend, who's this really great improviser out there, was just very simply like, you know, like, have you ever thought that, like, you're just, like, too fucking weird for them? And, you know, it's like, you know, I think back to, like, the, you know, did you ever see The Comedians of Comedy?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I have.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, that's always what I wanted, was, like, to do weird comedy, and, like, and if someone, you know, if a place like a standard sort of comedy club, you know, want my kind of weird comedy, well, fuck them. You know, like,
yeah.
I'll do music venues. I'll do wherever I'm going to put a microphone on, any kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a weird thing. You know, I think it was Brian Regan who made this, like, point, is, like, you would never go to a place like how comedy clubs are set up for any other thing. Like, you would never go to, like, a music club. Things are, like, set to genre, to different genre. You go to comedy club, but what's comedy to one person is completely different to these other people. And
exactly.
It's, like, there's no set, like, there's different genres inside of the genre. So it's like this Russian nesting doll thing of, like, you know,
exactly. What?
And then, you know, we were just talking about it. Like, we have the certain, like, style comedians that we love. And, you know, they're just not mentioned all the time or, you know, known by the general public. You know, it's funny, like, my Birbiglia has that video. He's like, I know, like, one person, at least, like, a couple people that you told them that were coming, you were coming to see me, and they said who? It's like, like that niche thing.
Exactly. Like, I don't, you know, I've never seen my comedy, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, like, we also, I don't know if I'm speaking for you or not, but for me, it's like, I don't aspire to be even at that level. Like, the level of comedian, like, that I want to be at is Gary Goldman, is someone like Kyle Kinane, who's, like, known in comedy as, like, a comedian and respected and all that shit. But, like, you can live a regular life, kind of.
Yeah.
It's like, I would not want to be, like, Kevin Hart level of, like, TMZ following you around and everything. Oh, like, that is not appealing. And that's a weird thing with comedy, because it's so attached to, even nowadays, like, celebrity is a big part of it, too. And I think comedians, what's funny is, like, that's sort of, like, our natural enemy is celebrities, because we like to think stand-up is, like, the skill. We craft it over time. We do it. We think, you know, these people who get famous or whatever for nothing, it can kind of grind our gears a bit. We're like, we get proud over what we do. And we're like, no, I don't just want to be a celebrity. It's like...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is such a good point. Like, yeah. And the... It's the... Like, I think there are, like, a few comedians out there that, like, sort of reach that celebrity sort of status.
Yeah.
That's like... and even then, like, some of them were, like, back in, like, old days, you know, where it's like... Like, fucking, like, Don Rickles was, like, a celebrity, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, like... But even then, that's, like, you know... That was just a guy being himself. That's
right.
Because he didn't write jokes or anything, you know?
Like, right.
And I don't know. I think it's a really, really great point that you made.
Yeah, because it's so hard, like... To be in this section of the entertainment business, it really is such a... It has its own unique thing. It's like, I'm a huge pro wrestling fan, so there's a lot of similarities with that business and with ours in stand-up. And it's just like...
Yeah.
It's just funny because, like, you know, I just... You know, you get into comedy to do it, and then there's all these other things involved. And you're just like, okay, how do I... navigate through this and make sure that what I'm doing, I want to keep on doing that way. You know, when it's so recently, like, how crowd work clips have become so popular online and that whole debate, my whole thing with that I just say is, that's not how I watch, I don't watch comedy now how people watch comedy now. That's different. You know, people that watch comedy now, like people that are like 16, they see comedy now on TikTok, and they see crowd work, and that's all it is. And they think that's what a comedian does. When I was a kid and I was getting into comedy, I was watching the half-hour showtimes of Louis C.K., of Bill Burr, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go on stage and tell jokes. I didn't want to go on stage and talk to the audience. That's not what I wanted to do. That wasn't my plan.
Exactly. No, that's so insane. You're so right, too. Like, that's such an insane idea to me. Of, like, I would get up on stage and just wait for someone to say something crazy to me.
Yeah.
Like...
And then I get, like, and I get so upset because I'm like, I've been working on these jokes for 7-8 years. Like, I want you to hear the jokes. I want you to hear the jokes I wrote and did for 6 years. I want you to listen to this joke that I wrote 3 years ago. Please like that. I don't care what you do for a living.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. Like, God, dude, exactly.
And that just goes to it. It's like, that's what we want. Like, I think that's such a thing. And then there's always, you know, different personalities in comedy. Like, the thing that kind of annoyed me was when I started doing comedy, I was like, oh, there's people that I didn't get along with in life who became comedians. It's like, and that's annoying too. It's like, you go there, you find this escape, you're like, oh, I'm like these people so much. I'm like you know, I wish I knew them when I was a kid. Like, they're so, this world is like all these comedians I get along with. And then it's like, no, that dickhead is just like a guy I knew in school who picked on me, and he's a comedian too. And it's like, yeah, no, yeah. I don't like that. I don't like that those guys exist. I don't like that the bully became a good comedian. Like,
bullying kind of like attitude in so much of like modern comedy.
Yeah.
When so much of comedy, and like what I like about comedy is like we're all one Sephora hall away from being clowns.
Right, exactly. Like, that's all that it is. Like I see that now. Right. Like, I'm not trying to shit on this, because I had the guy on who hosts it, the show, but they have, like, this open mic, like, kind of show. It's kind of based off of Kill Tony, but it's much nicer. They're much nicer to the comics instead of just insulting them. And, but we have a couple new guys who, they don't go to the mics. They're not very, like, involved. They just go to that one show once a month. And the thing that's tough with a lot of them is they'll go on stage and they'll, like, start bombing. And then they, like, flirt with the women in the audience to make themselves, like, look cool or whatever. And I'm like, that never would come to me. I'm like, no, my like, advice is always, like, no, you got to make yourself look more like an idiot on stage when you're failing. Like, you can't change it and be like, oh, I want to be cool. Very few people can pull that off. Some people can. But for the most part, you have to, like, dig deeper into, like, making yourself look like an idiot on stage. Because that's all that you do. Like, it just works better that way of becoming more likable. Because I think that's a tough thing nowadays. Everyone wants to be cool. Everyone wants to have, like, the last laugh, have the last thing. And, like, that's not what comedy is really about. It's really about making light of everything, and it has to come from you first. And
exactly.
I think the one thing that's really helped and also, like, kind of hindered stand-up in a way is the combination of hip-hop culture in stand-up is very, like, I don't want to, like, shut on stuff like Wild and Out, but that kind of stuff, like, you know, the rap battles, like, that all, I feel like roast comedy that has, like, evolved into, like, a thing of, like, competitions and shows, that all, like, emanated from, or, like, came from, like, rap battles. And, like,
yeah.
They had that show on MTV, like, years ago, like, your mom jokes that people would, like, write and do. That's just, you know, that's just what roast comedy is now.
Right.
And it's just, like, that hip-hop culture where, and in that hip-hop culture, there is that thing of, like, oh, I have to be the cool one all the time. I have to be the winner. I have to be the one with the last word. It's, like, that's completely antithesis to, like, what I think comedy is.
You know, I 100% agree.
Yeah.
You know, like, even in, like, the sort of more sort of, like, structured written stuff. Like,
right.
I'll hear lines and stuff that's, like, that are basically, like, puns, you know? And
right.
I'm like, you know, why does stuff like that sound so familiar to me? And it's, like, it is, like, they're writing a joke like they are, like, a bar, like, in a rap song that is, like, you know, like, it would make, like, someone listening to a rap song go, like, oh!
Right. You know, like, they want to write, like, a bar. They don't want to write, like, a joke. And that's very distinctive. Like, the one thing I have a lot of respect for that does it in, like, a positive way, in, like, a really good way with, like, an influence of rap music is any one-liner comic does it correctly.
Exactly.
Is they sort of do that well, where it has that rhythm of that, but it still has the jokey nature of, like, I have a lot of respect for comedians who do one-liners, just that, of, like, just those people. Like, I have a friend, John Beecroft, who does that. I have, like, you know, you have, like, Mitch Hedberg and people like that. And
totally.
It's, like, that is a huge, that's a good, that's a tough style to learn to write, because it's so, like, it's so formulaic in a good way of, like,
yeah.
Of, like, oh, it goes that way. And to me, it's, like, that is something that I always... So that's like an opposite thing of it. So it's not like rap music has totally, like, ruined comedy in a way. It's just sort of the...
Yeah.
It's infiltrated it in like the spirit, I think, of what a comedian can be.
I think that's exactly how you should say that.
Yeah.
Because it is the thing that sets my teeth on edge, is the wanting to look cool.
Right.
And, I don't know, it's like, anyone can do cool stuff whenever
right.
they want to, you know, you could just be a rapper. You know
right, I mean? Exactly.
It's the same thing of, like, God, I was at an open mic not too long ago,
mm-hmm.
and, like, there was a guy, like, talking to me about, like, money and, like, how much money I've made doing comedy, you know, and I'm like, not a lot.
No, and that's not what it's about, like, before we start, I want to stop this for a moment just to say that, it's the I would never, like, be so, like, brazen to give, like, people advice right away out of doing stand-up. But if, like, they asked me, like, this is the things I would say is something they wouldn't even think about. I'd be like, do you have 10 years? Do you have 15 years? like, that's the first question I have is, do you have the time? It's funny, I used to say before the Will Smith thing and all that and everything, like with people being, you know, attacked on stage, I used to say comedy can hurt you emotionally a lot. It can hurt you like financially a ton, but it will never hurt you physically. And that's not true anymore. It's like now it hurts you in so many different ways. It'll hurt you physically now. People can't get mad at what you say on stage. It's like you have all these risks. And with stand-up, I also think, like, at its highest level that people see all the time on Netflix, they see it one way where it's very well produced, it's very well done. You see, like, the Netflix special, how it's all, like, made. And then you go and see comedy, like, we do comedy. And it's like, no, we're in a basement, dude. We're in a bar. Like, this is not glamorous. So,
like, if I'm lucky, there's more than 30 people.
Right, exactly.
Like, that is... Yeah, that's the thing with these, like, independent shows, but then, like, you know, it's like... It's not this, like, giant production, you know, with...
Oh, of course. And that can be tough, too. Because I don't know if you've ever had this, like, you make your own open mic, and, like, it can be hard to explain it to people that, like... run the bar or run the venue of what an open mic is, because it can't be too much of a production. It can't be too much of like show thing. It can't have like too much of that. It has to be like, no, this is just like, we just need a stage and a microphone. And like, that's it.
Right.
We don't need to like do a raffle and have all these audience members. And it's like,
exactly.
It's like people, but that's just what we have. And I think it's become like, I don't know if you watched did you watch Crashing on HBO, Pete Holmes' show?
Yes.
I like that show because, and I also like parts of Louis' show because it showed people the inside of comedy a little bit, which I think helped.
Yeah.
It helped a little bit. That stuff helped a little bit. But there's still a lot of negativity towards what we do exactly. And,
exactly.
You know, it's funny. I was in the bathroom one time and I was just like, this was so annoying to me. Someone was like, they complimented my set, and then they seemed like disappointed that I said that I wrote my shit. I was like, oh, did you like come up with that at the top of your head? And I'm like, no, I wrote that joke like 3 years ago. And they were like, instead of being impressed by that, like I thought they were like disappointed. I'm like, because that's a common thing that people think. They think we just go up there and talk, and it's like, that's not true.
People like ask me like often, just like, so you just like come up with your stuff like on the fly, right? And I'm like, I mean, I guess like sometimes,
you know. And it's funny, such the comedy nerd that I am, I only know two people who do that, who don't write on stage and just do everything improv. Who's his name? Do you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah.
The friend of Larry David, that actor.
Richard Lewis.
No, the other guy. The, like, heavyset guy.
Oh,
You know who I'm talking about. Yeah, him. He does stuff complete. Jack Garland. He does things completely, like, he just talks. He doesn't write anything down. And the only other person I know who does that is Sinbad. And it's like those two guys are the only guys that kind of do that shit, where they can go on stage and just talk and be like, and know how to do the jokes like that way. But 99% of us just were writing on stage and writing off stage, and you're always coming up with shit, and it gets funnier over time, and it's crazy how, like, for me, like, the one thing I'm fascinated about with people who do have an album or something is I've been working on one for writing an hour, like, for 4 years now, and it's a real endeavor because I don't want it to be, like, one-man showish. I really want it to be, like, stand-up, but it has to have a narrative, and it has to have, like, a beginning and an end point and parts in the middle and, like, a general sense. And, like, what I love about your album is just, like, that's kind of what I want mine to be exactly like, is, like, just all the jokes, all the bits, all the, like, this is me in, like, 50 minutes. Like, it's just, like, that's the containment. And I think a lot of people now, you know, it's funny because it's odd, like, how things have changed so much with social media. Because you used to just not know comedians, like, until they came around. Until they came out on, like, David Letterman, and you saw their, like, 5 minutes there. Like, you had no, like, no history of them. And now, so many people will, like, show their first open mic on, like, TikTok or YouTube and, like, show their entire career from start to, like, middle, because those people never really last. But it's, like, you, and that's the thing that I have, like, in my, another advice that I give is, like, you have to have that period where you let yourself fail and you don't show stuff publicly of, like, you know, it's like, to me, I waited 2 years to show my material because I didn't have stuff. So it was like, you know, once you have an act to show, you can show stuff online. But I think there's a real thing nowadays where people want to treat it like the movie of their life or whatever, or like TV show of your life. It's like, no, there's going to be moments where you're not going to want to be filmed during it. You're going to be like,
that's insane, right?
Yeah, it's like, it was like, no, this is not. And that's that goes partly to, like, what I say. It's like, do you have 10, 15 years to fail?
It's like, exactly. Right. Well, it's like, I have seen so many clips from local stand-ups, like, people I know, you know, who are, like, very, very new. Right. And it's like they're taking video of, like, trying to do crowd work at an open mic.
Right.
And I'm like, no one has... You chose for people to see this?
Like, right. It's like, you know, you want to know how to do it. Like, I think that's the tough thing about doing comedy is you at least have, when you start doing comedy, you at least have that small bit of confidence that you need to do comedy, that you know what you think is funny. That's the main thing that you need. But you can't get so wrapped up in your head in the beginning that you think that you're just there immediately. And I think that happens for a lot of people. They just immediately think, oh, I'm going to be a star. It's like, maybe, eventually. But no matter how good you are at the start, you're not going to be, like, 100% great.
Exactly.
And,
yeah, it's,
I mean, like, that's the toughest thing. It takes confidence to get on stage the first time, but it takes, like, and it sounds like so, I don't know if it sounds over the top at all, but it does take a lot of heart and a lot of inner spirit and inner, like, mentality to stay on stage and keep going up and go and keeping a full, like, schedule of what you do and how many mics you do a week. Because, you know, the thing I had to learn, which was a big lesson for me, is that not everyone has the same exact goal as you as to be a comedian. In the way that you want to be a comedian. people have different views of, like, what they want to do. Some people just do this for fun, and some people do it, like, once a month, like, just something that they do, and it can be tough because you're, like, you vote, I was like, no, this is the goal that I set. So I think everyone has that goal, and it just doesn't work that way sometimes. Some people just do it for fun, or they do it, like, you know, it's not really that serious to them, and it's, like, that's the thing that you have to, or maybe they're, like, they'll get into it for, I know a few people who've gotten into it and then they become like a writer on like a TV show or something, or they go and do sketch comedy. It's like, you know, you're always going to have people who drop off and find what they want to do.
Yeah.
Because stand-up is such that you get stuck in that thing of like, oh, this is its whole entire thing. And if you want to do something else, you can do that, but you have to know that you want to do that. If you're a sketch guy, you're going to do stand-up, you're going to have a really hard time to do that. And it's like,
exactly.
But the good thing is you'll find that. You'll be like, okay, now I can go do this. But that's like a thing for me. I had to learn, oh, people have different goals, Richard. People people don't want to have don't want to do what you want to do and don't want to end up like how you end up doing this. And that was a big lesson for me to learn.
Definitely. An interesting idea as well of like the people who like end up like dropping off a stand-up and then, you know, like do sketches or, you know, something like along those lines. It's, you know, it used to be for me just like, what, you don't want to like travel the road and,
right,
like, stay in these like awful hotels in these small towns,
right,
and, like, you live this lonely existence.
Right, and never break.
While making much more, generally speaking, more palatable comedy, more palatable and successful comedy.
Right.
You don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah, it is a huge gamble, and it is a huge, like, you know, it's funny how the grass can become greener when you're doing what you like. You know, it can be such a funny thing. Like, you can talk to people off stage that don't know anything about comedy, and you can tell them about it, and they'll be like, oh, this is a analogy I always use. Like, have you seen the movie Dodgeball before?
Yes.
Yeah. The scene I always use for, like, if you ever bring a stranger, like a friend, to an open mic, and, like, they say, like, oh, that was terrible, and you'd be like, no, it was terrible 2 weeks ago. This was a fine night.
Yeah.
It's like that. The analogy that I make with that movie is, they have the weird coach come in, and he's like, is he weird? And then he's like, no. And then he acts all weird, and he's like, well, not weird for us. It's like, the same thing with us. It's like, our situation, you know, people come into it, and they see what we do, and it's like, they kind of get it, kind of like, immediately. They're like, oh, yeah, this is a completely different ballpark than I was thinking of.
It used to be, and obviously I don't do this now because it's dumb as hell, but, like, I used to, like, take dates to open mics.
Oh, really?
What a fucking nightmare. Because, like, it would always end up the same way, you know, just, like, someone, you know, like, me going on a date with someone, and they're like, oh, you can stand up? That's so, like, that's interesting. Like, I'm supposed
right.
to perform, and I'm like, what? I'm going to an open mic tonight, you know, like, you can come with, and then...
Yeah, you have to... You want them to come to a show, it's like... But it's like a weird thing of like, I guess the analogy would be like, you want people to see you. You wouldn't want to, it's much better to make food in a restaurant as a cook than to make food at home for someone and be like, this is what I do. It's like, well, I don't exactly do it this way when I'm actually doing it in the restaurant.
Just like, you do it this way. And it's just like, outside of a Chinese food restaurant,
right,
where the open mic is, with just like my face and my hands, and
right,
and they're just like, you choose to do
you
this
choose to do this
there.
Yeah, and that's another thing that happens, like, people don't they'll not get it, and that'll be the whole entire thing of like, oh yeah, it's like, yeah. And you have to sort of, I've learned that you can't, like, you can't really back down from that. You can't let that bother you. You can kind of, like, relish in it in a way. You can be like, yep, that's how I spend my time. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's better than being at home and playing video games all day and eating. It's like, you know, at least I'm going out, I'm talking to people, I'm doing something, I'm crafting something.
And I would always, like, so just internalize that. I'm just, like you choose to do this, and,
like,
I say something like, yep, I wouldn't
want to
love me either.
Right, exactly. It's like...
Man.
It's like, I'll stop doing this when my mom tells me that she's proud of me.
That'll never happen.
Yeah, it's like, that's how it is. Yeah, so I just love talking comedy about, like, this and having someone like you on who loves it like I do. It's always just so fun to get, like, deep into it and really, like, have your, speaking of, like, parents and stuff, are your parents, like, do they know that you do comedy?
Oh, yeah. Like,
are they supportive?
I say that, like, I get my love of comedy from my folks. Mm-hmm. They were just really super into SNL and just, like, comedy movies in general.
Oh,
they
that's great.
Really super into stand-up.
Right.
But also, like, my parents are, you know, like, my parents are very, like, religious people, and, like, politically, they're, like, pretty conservative, and, mm-hmm. like, you know, so it's like, this is a story I always tell, when my parents first saw me do stand-up, where it's like, My mom is very needy, and my dad has really bad anger issues. Mm-hmm. And you put that together with just a dash of autism, and boy, oh boy, that explains a lot about me.
Right.
So, I was doing this joke at the time about how, like, my parents were so religious, they never gave me, like, a sex talk.
Oh.
Of, like, how it works, or, like, you know, like, what to do to be safe, and, you know, like, and, like, it's a story about, like, they bought me, you know, they're like, he likes to read, let's get him a book, and so they gave me this book from a Berean Christian bookstore,
mm-hmm.
That is about, like, there's, like, cartoon pictures of, like, sperm and egg cells. With googly eyes, and it's like the sperm is swimming towards the egg. No mention of penis going into vagina or like love or anything like that.
Right.
And I was telling the story, and my mom stands up from the audience and is like, in front of everyone, like, that's not how that went down. not understanding that this is, like, what I'm doing with the performance. Or,
right.
It's
an exaggeration. It's a joke. It's, yeah.
Yeah. And really, what that was, like, because right after that, you know, my mom, I'm, like, talking to her after my set, and she was like, well, you know, the least you could have done was just, like, bring me up on stage with you.
Oh. I can imagine that of, like, the one thing that's tough with, I think, parents and anything, from my experience, is, especially as a person with a disability, is they really, people who are so used to being reliant, like, you relying on them, embracing your autonomy is very, very hard for them to do. And they don't know that. They don't know that that is what you need to be a person, is to be, have your own autonomy, your own bodily and, like, emotional, like, this is me, this is myself. And stand-up is tough with that, because that is you on stage doing it yourself. You don't have anyone holding your hand, anyone, like doing subtitles of, like, what you mean, or or trying to, like, you know, inject whatever they think. It's like, no, this is my time, and that's a tough thing with people. I think when their person in their family, they care. They're used to being that person. And yeah, that can be tough with us. We're like, no, this is my time. This is what I do. And I can imagine with that can be pretty tough. Like, my parents are super supportive, and you know, my mom, her thing is just like, she doesn't always like the subject matter that people have had, like, if it relates to her, really, that's like the main thing. But she's very good. Like, she's a good audience member. She's gotten a lot better being an audience member. It's like funny. Well, we went to the show that my friends were doing, and like, everyone did okay. It wasn't like great, and she was like kind of disappointed by it. And I was like, no, you're right to be disappointed by this tonight. It's like your comedy palette has grown. Like, you have a thing now. You've been watching me do this for like close to 10 years. You have an idea of what is good and what is bad now. But I can imagine that, like, if your parents don't really see you come do it a lot, there is that, you know, it's so funny, like, people will be so surprised about the stuff I can talk about in front of my mom, because I do a lot of bluer stuff, and, like, it's not too blue, like, this, the way I describe it, my friend called me playfully blue, the way I describe it is, like, 14 and up, like, that's really what it is. It's like, I don't curse in my act a whole lot, I don't, like, do a bunch of F-bombs, but I will say the word balls many times, and it's like, at what point does that become, you know, problematic? If there's a Christian in the audience, if there's little kids, if there's, like, you know,
right,
it's like, I'm never gonna go full vulgarity, but it's like, there is a little bit of, oh, this is lowbrow for people. And to me, I don't know if you have this, is like, I don't view comedy, especially stand-up, in like barriers of like clean and dirty. I don't put it in meters like that. That's never been comedy for me. So like, one person that I always get so annoyed when people call him a clean comic, because I don't consider him to be clean, is Jim Gaffigan. Like, because he's really smart in that he does this a lot. Like, he's just a comedian, and like, it's the same thing, like, he went a little bluer when he was at the Golden Globes, like, and he told them, like, oh, I'm not a pedophile, like, he brought that line out. Like, he'll do something. What's really cool is he'll have his special or whatever, and it'll be, like, the first 15 minutes or 20 minutes is, like, all really clean jokes. And then it'll pivot to doing jokes that'll either go over the kid's head, or you'll have to explain it in the car. But he does have those like little lines of like, I never view him as completely like super duper clean. It's like, yeah,
he'll definitely go there.
He'll go there, yeah. Like, one of my favorite jokes that he has recently is he does this joke on his album Family, I think it's like Quality Time, like 2 years ago, 2019 or whatever. And he has this whole bit about horses. He does all these jokes that are like very clean about horses. And then he mentions this one thing. He's like, yeah, he's like, horse breeding, that'll keep you up at night. Don't print out still photos and put your face on it and show it to your wife. She won't find it funny. It's like, you don't think it's funny, she won't find it funny. It's like, that's a dirty joke, but people don't expect it.
Exactly.
And it's like,
God, that's so funny, because like, you can tell like when a joke like doesn't either comes from just like work
layers out of
nowhere, or like, you tell when a joke comes from like actual experience.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think,
God, I love that.
Yeah, that's the toughest thing too, is jokes are such an interesting thing, because that's the thing I'm dealing with now, is like, are you telling something, or are you like performing? Because there's a lot of that, just a lot of just people sharing their opinions in comedy, and that can be very tough, because you're like, okay, where does the joke end and your point begin? Or
exactly.
That, and that always frustrates me. I'm like, because I just look at everything, it's kind of like an equation. I'm like, it's kind of like being like a scientist. It's like, oh, I'm not listening to your opinion, I'm looking for the punchline. I'm like, my brain is trained to look for that punchline, it's like I don't have time to sift through what is an opinion, what is a joke, what is this. It's like, no, I need the setup, the punchline, and that's it. Like, you know, and that can be tough when someone wants to share, like, a valid opinion or even, like, something that needs to be said. It's like...
Personally, you know, like, I mentioned before, like, I'm a very political guy.
Right.
I've never, you know, like, call myself a political comedian.
Right.
But it's just because, like, I personally don't find, like, what my personal set of politics to be as very funny.
Oh, yeah, me neither. I have very few political jokes, even though I'm pretty political as a person. It's like,
yeah.
To me, I'm like, because that just comes from a sense of, like, well, I don't want people to laugh at what I'm saying. I want them to agree with what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's like...
I don't know.
And to me, I have such, like, a... And it's such a funny thing. Like, I'm pretty good at distancing things, like, of what's on stage is a joke and what's off stage is. Like, I'm pretty good with that. I don't really... I'm not very, like, I'm pretty good about not being, I don't know the word for it, like, being overly woke, like people say. Like, that's never been me, because I'm always, like, because my thing to it is, I know comedians who say stuff on stage that is, like, totally out of pocket, totally, like, they're a dark, dirty comedian, and then off stage, they're, like, the sweetest guy. And it's the same thing to me being a wrestling fan. I'm like, that guy plays the bad guy on stage, but he's really super nice in real life. And then there's the inverse of that all the time of people, like, they go on stage, they say terrible things, and it's like, no, that person's just a terrible person. It's like, you can't even defend it. You're like, you want to be like, oh, no, he's like this guy who's, like, smart and, like, nice as a person off stage, and is, like, what they do on stage is completely, like, a joke. And then it's like, no, this person really goes up there, and they really say this stuff, and they really mean it, and somehow it's funny.
They are being racist in earnest.
Right. It's like, I would much rather someone... And also, like, the thing with that whole entire thing, a lot of humor, what I've learned, like, recently, what I've come to thinking of, is a lot of humor is... that's offstage. Like, regular humor between regular people. It is lowbrow. It is not that smart. Written or thought of as it is on stage comedy. It just isn't, you know. If you're friends with, I know countless, like, things, this is, like, a common thing, like, if you have interracial friendships, the jokes you will say to each other in those interracial relationships will be the most racist shit, like, ever. But they'll be totally cool with it because you're friends and you have that barrier of that, like, there's that thing there of, like, it's okay to talk about this, it's okay to joke about this in private, in our own personal friendship. And then you translate that to on stage, and it doesn't work. It's like, no, that doesn't work in the context of stand-up at all. It's like, it can be fun to say that, like, you know, you'll have your, you know, your black friend or whatever, be like, oh, he's always late, and then you, like, you make that little joke with each other, and then it's like, you say it on stage, people are like, what?
Jokes on stage, stand up.
Should be smarter. And I think we should hold it, like, this is where I get in trouble, is, like, I think we should hold it to a higher standard of stand up to be that. Like,
exactly.
The one analogy I always make with offensive humor is, like, there's a difference between going and seeing a painter, like, paint something that is, like, offensive, but, like, it's beautifully painted. It's, like, a beautiful painting of something terrible. That is way different. That is way different than some dickhead, right, drawing a dick on the wall. It's, like, that is completely different. It's, like, if you make something obscene, but, like, good art-wise, that is what I'm, like, searching for. It's, like, you know, I'll get, like, so angry, like, you know, the like, whole entire thing with, like, whenever, you know, Dave Chappelle and Ricky Gervais come out with these specials and people, like, get on me for being oversensitive, I'm like, no, I just like it smart. Like, I like Anthony Jeselnik. I like Daniel Tosh. I like people who are God forbid, put a little bit of wordplay into your shit. Make it fun for me. That's what I need. Put a little spice into it of like, I, you know, with everything that happened with Louis, it's so disappointing of like, you know, just the whole thing with him now and his, you know, his just reputation now. But I listened to his new album and it's fucking hilarious. And he still writes jokes out and he still has like, it's just like he still does word play and word stuff with it. And really, you see he is a writer. And it's like, I think with these people, it's like, no, they're being lowbrow, but they're not even showing the skill set of it. Of like, and that's what pisses me off. I'm like, no, it's not done that way. Of like, I don't want to hear jokes. You know, it sounds, I don't know if it sounds like kind of hoity-toity or whatever, snobbish, but like, I don't want comedians on stage to do jokes that normal humans would do jokes about.
I've been trying to find a way to say that for like weeks now.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, no, like I'm all about inclusivity. It's,
right.
It's like my whole fucking thing.
Right.
But like, not everyone should just be able to stand up.
Right. Some people are just, they, and you know what's funny is me and you, and I think every comedian, we can, there's just ways we can point it out, you know, and it's way different than anything else in like a sport or a musician. Like a musician could be like, okay, I want to be a drummer, and that person plays drums, and a person who's a drummer will be like, you're never going to learn this person. You're never going to learn this kid. We don't have that of like, you can't tell someone, oh, you don't have, you don't have the personality to do
that. Yeah.
It's like we can sense it on each other and smell it on each other and be like, yeah, that person's a comic. And
exactly.
The one way that I always recently, what I have like to decipher who is a comedian, like quote unquote in my mind, is someone who is not just observational, but like self-observant, is like someone who can do that. If you can tell me, okay, you can do a joke about, you know, a lamp, but also do a joke about how the lamp makes you feel and how that lamp affects your daily life is like, or relates to you is like, that's it. Like, that's what I want. If you can just go up there, and I think a lot of people, like, they do this, and I wish that I had started doing this. I see a lot of people, they'll start by being storytellers on stage, and I see how that can work because that is obviously an easy way to figure out punchlines early on.
Yeah.
I'm, like, very envious of people who do that because I was never, like, a storyteller originally. So I think when people start that way, they seem so much better because there are those points where you just know in basic conversation when that laugh moment is coming up and when that punch is, it's so much more easier than trying to come up with a joke and be like, okay, this did not make sense at all. Yeah.
And really, like, this is my experience with it, with, like, you know, kind of, like, start up as a storyteller myself.
Oh, really, yeah.
It's like, as, like, you know, just purely a storyteller, like, it was like, man, like, I'll tell these stories to, like, friends or coworkers or, you know, anyone else, and, like, it gets this big reaction, but when I do it, like, on a stand-up stage, it's like, it just falls flat, and I'm like, like, what the fuck am I doing wrong? Like, what is the difference? And it's like, the difference is, like, the difference is the context. It's
right. Because they know you in that context. Those people know you from a certain situation. And then you go off stage kind of like, very like, okay. And that's the same thing of like throwing off in the beginning when you have to introduce yourself on stage. Like, I always say it's kind of like in the first 7 seconds, you kind of have to be like Kramer from like Seinfeld. You have to come in and in like 7 seconds, like people have to know what is this guy's vibe? What is this guy's like, you know, even though we don't like to think of it as like what we do on stage, as like a character, you kind of have to view it that way of like, what are people going to first see and acknowledge and be like, yep, this is that guy. And I can relate to that right away and be like, yep, this guy is high energy He's going to be high energy. I understand that. It's like, you know, it's just that. You have to establish something of yourself. And
exactly.
I think we get, like, that's the contrast of, like, a comedian who's been doing it a long time. If you see, like, how they walk up on stage versus how people who are brand new who walk up on stage, it's like we have the playbook in our hand of, like, okay, I do this, this goes here, this goes here, they laugh, I move on to this. And when you're starting out, you're just scrambling. You're just reaching for everything. You're reaching, you're, like, climbing. You're climbing, like, the analogy that I would use, I just thought of it now. It's like you're climbing, you're doing rock climbing, and, like, I've never done it, like, really. But, like, what I imagine, it's like, imagine doing rock climbing with a blindfold. That's what stand-up is when you start out. And when you continue to do stand-up over time, the blindfold comes off, and you can reach for stuff and go up and go more directly of, like, it just gets, you know, clearer of what you want to do on stage.
Exactly.
It's like, that's what you have. So that's another thing that I can mention. It's like, that's exactly what it's like. It's like, yeah, because people come on stage and you're just like, when you're brand new, you're just, you want that laugh. And to me, I still have it, like, in a way of, like, timing is pretty hard for me, because I'll get, like, people will give me, like, 10 minutes on, like, a show, and I'll end up doing 8 minutes, not because I ran out of material, but because I got the crowd so hot that I'm like, I don't want to mess this up. I'm like, I got them to the epicenter of being so, like, so, they found me so funny, this joke went so well, that I'm just going to finish off my set here instead of figuring out some way that I'm going to, I get, like, self-conscious. I'm like, well, I'm going to lose them if I take this 30-second pause, if I go into this bit. It's like, no, I got them white hot, and I want to keep them there and be like, good night. It's like, oh, he was only up there for like 6 minutes and we gave him 10 minutes. It's like, yeah, I got them to the point. I got them to be super.
Yeah. I feel like
I'm
quickly and more efficiently than you did.
So, like, I think, I wonder, like, that must be hard too, like, when I'm trying to, like, do longer sets. It's like, I can imagine, I was curious if you went through that, if you have, like, when you were working out, you know, the stuff for your album, like, was it something that you took, like, okay, I'm going to do this chunk, like, time by time, or did you do it all at once? I guess my question is, did you have, like, a pre, like, show or anything before you did the recording of, like, over time of, like, okay, I'm going to do, like, this chunk of, like, this first 15 minutes on this one show, or how did that work?
I'll tell you right now, man, I flew into, like, doing the album kind of blind.
Oh, like, really? Wow.
I really agonized over, like, the order of the set and, like, because, you know, also a lot of the time when you record a special or record an album like that, you do it over, like, two
tapes, shows. Yeah. Yeah.
And I had just the one, and I'm lucky and I'm thankful that I got it in one. Before doing, like, what would eventually become the album, the longest set I had ever done previous to that was 30 minutes.
Ah.
And so I never worked out the album as a special until the recording.
Oh, wow.
And most people will tell you, and I'll tell you, you shouldn't do that.
Right.
The way the recording got set up was just like, I have a friend who's a musician, and they were like, you know, I'm trying to get more into producing, and I would love to record, like, a comedy album.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, that's something I've always wanted to do. Like, when you think about it, yada, yada. And then, like, I got broken up with. And, and that was a relationship. And really what happened was, like, I am choosing not to think about this. I'm going to record an album.
Right.
And that's what I'm going to do. And don't get me wrong, it worked out swimmingly.
Right. I think, you know, it's interesting how it's like that's where like the aspect of it comes in. You know, it's kind of like that's where the your life as a movie aspect comes in. It's like it's not that you start filming yourself doing stand up right away. It's that something crazy happens in your life. You're a comedian and you're like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make a special. That's the story. That's the thing. I'm like, this fucking thing happened to me, and it led to this, and now I have this album, and it's like, you know, it sucks going, it probably sucked going through that breakup, and still probably does, but you have that other side of it of like, I came out and I got a comedy album out of it.
I had a joke on the album about dating a polyamorous person.
Yeah.
And, like, it was that, and they were like, I just, like, you know, and they were like, the way they talked about, you know, having multiple partners was like, you know, like, the great thing about having multiple partners is that, you know, you get sort of, like, you know, different needs met by different people, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I can see how that is, and, you know, and then they were just like, you know, when they broke up with me, they were like, I just really have to focus on my other partners, I think, right now. And I'm like, okay, so I fulfill none of your needs.
Right.
And, like, that's basically what that is.
Yeah,
and
I can imagine how heartbreaking that can be because, like, you put an emotion into that. That's, you know, that's a romantic relationship. You put a lot of work into that. And to that, not to mean anything, that's very, I empathize because that's very, that almost feels like cruel in a way that's not how polyamory should work. It's like, I don't know, like, to me, whenever I hear, like, about that, I've never been polyamorous or, like, what I've ever seen, but what I've seen of it from those people is I have such respect for them because they seem like such, like, the people who do it correctly seem like such, like, diverse, intelligent people to be able to do that. Like, emotionally, too. That takes a lot of emotional, like, skill to take to be like, okay, I'm going to get this from this person, and keep everyone happy. They failed not making everyone happy. That's not on you. That's on them. It's like, you failed the polyamory part. You had 6 partners and you weren't able to make all of them happy. Why is that my fault? I mean, like if you had the same amount of, this would be like a good fit. It's like, if the polyamory worked in that, all those other people were my partner too, and it was all like a group thing, then that could be my fault. It's like, okay, you didn't make sure that Joey is happy with this thing. I don't have to care how Joey is feeling. You're supposed to make Joey and me happy.
I was really sort of broken up about, you know, like, that relationship, you know, ending, and, but, like, what I really found, like, afterwards was, like, their other partners, they had 2 other partners, and,
right.
You know, I was not dating either of them.
Right.
But what was great was, like, I really, like, I kind of missed going over to their place the most. So, like, right. I'm just, like, all these people are great, and I'm kind of, like, emotionally, like, friendship-wise, connecting with these other 2 people.
Right.
Like, a lot better.
Right.
I kind of miss the other people you're fucking.
Right. I was like, oh, they were cool. They were nice to me.
they were my partners. partners. They were my business partners.
They were my business partners. It's kind of like, it sounds like a project now.
It's like, they were kind of like my favorite co-workers.
That's really funny. That is really funny. Man. Like, yeah, that's really funny.
Richard, real quick, man.
Yeah.
I'm gonna jet here.
Soon. No, I was gonna ask you because I want to say thank you so much for doing this and for doing, like, we did like 1 hour and 40. That's great. I usually just do 1 hour. I've been doing longer first time episodes with people because I always have people come back on, you know, because there's. Because in comedy, you know, it evolves. Everyone, you know, they get a new album, they get a new hosting gig, they get something. And we sort of went through, you know, everything and more. I just had very little written down of what I wanted to ask you. And we went through it pretty well. And I really liked vibing with you over comedy and getting into these discussions. I love talking about comedy as a comedy nerd. And I just want to thank you for giving me more than 1 hour of your time. I mean, that's always means a lot to me to get that from someone. So thank you so much for having this on. I just want you to do one more thing. What is your social media stuff?
Yes. You can find me at Lou Moon Comedy on pretty much everything. TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Yeah, that's it.
And the album is called Lou. Just called Lou, right?
Yeah, it's just called Lou. Streaming everywhere. And if you would like to support me, you can buy the album on Amazon or iTunes or on standuprecords.com.
Right.
I fully understand if you can't afford that, but if you want to support, that would be greatly appreciated.
Right. All right.